Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. And we've managed to mess up the sound for our engineer. We're sorry about that.
I got nothing.
Bill's got nothing. try those headset. You know, it always is an episode. There are people here who do a show right before us, and everything seems to work fine. Then we walk in, and uh-oh, nothing works.
I got nothing.
Bill's got nothing.
Huh. Yep. Do I have a mic?
You do.
Oh, okay, good.
Do you want to, let's see. So my name's Aaron Ryan.
Oh, there it is. Let me give you something, Bill.
Robert, under the table, you have to quit talking.
Still got nothing.
Everybody's got nothing.
Well, it shows that I'm getting something here.
Huh. Well, we got Bill on a real short leash today. Bill's going to have to stand up.
Oops.
Not good.
Okay, we're here.
Huh.
Temporarily.
So, after that, because who wouldn't want to be our sponsor, right? Should we talk about other things before we go there?
Yeah.
Let's see, we've got Robert under the desk struggling. We've got Bill on a short tethered rope. It's fun for everybody.
Yeah. Hmm. So what's going on today? Who are you?
I already said. I already confessed that I was Aaron Ryan.
Oh, okay. Well, who's our sponsor today?
Yeah.
Yeah, sponsors, Pape Machinery,
whoa,
of course.
I thought you were having me do it. I was like, wow, this is new. I'm all excited.
We're not that messed up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, our sponsor today is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And if you need anything John Deere, anything ag, go by and see them. They do it all over there. They do part sales service, and they can get you fixed up. Right now, they're doing a booming business in service. So if you got a tractor or a mower or something needs to be fixed up, go by and see them. Their phone number is 226-9226, and you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Just thought I'd leave you hanging there for a second.
Oh, no, that's okay.
So we should hear, before we get too much farther along down the trail, let's switch headsets so you don't have to stand here for 2 hours leaning over the table. Our guest today is really fun, though. Thank goodness. Thank goodness somebody knows what they're doing. We haven't had William Kay on for a while. He's probably like, God, these guys have gotten even worse since the last time I talked to them. They're complete goofballs. Well, let's see. Our friend, William Kay, started coming on with us in December of 2011. So he was one of our very first favorite people, which is kind of awesome. And he has a website. Let's not forget about that one. Ecofascism.com. Great site. Has tons of information. The purpose is to expose both the similarities between environmentalism and fascism and the connections between environmentalism and modern fascistic or arch-conservative individuals and groups. Really individual, unique perspective, and always very well-researched. He lives in Alberta, Canada. He hosted a program in Vancouver on the radio until, gosh, I know, no one's ever heard about this, right? Especially with what's going on with all the protests and the burning the buildings down. But intolerant, free speech-hating environmentalists drove him off the air. I can't believe they haven't driven us off the air yet. We've been on here for like 10 years.
What's the deal there? Or nobody.
We live in a small town. Bonus.
You're having me on. Don't worry.
The Chinese have our number, though.
That's right. The Chinese hate us. And you know what? I added two things to the page for William today, actually. And I should tell you, we're airing May 31st of 2020, in case we replay this at another time and you don't understand why we talked about people burning down buildings. So on our website at wethepeopleradio.us, I do hope you go on there. Just click on the page for today, May 31st, 2020, and it gives you the link to the Canada Free Press articles that he writes and also the link to Global Research, which is a center for research on globalism. So for those of you that are into following those topics or like to research those things, he has a lot of really good material on there. And I found out right before we left the house, actually, that he also has books.
What?
I didn't know about books. What the heck, William? You've been writing books, too?
Yeah, I've got a couple of books online. I've got one book that deals with the history of the global population control movement. It's a sort of a primer. It runs through about 200 years of history in about 200 pages. But
And we did a show about that with you, actually. We did a show.
Population control, yep.
Yep. If people are in, you know, you hear that every now and then. Oh, it's about population control. And people are like, oh, that's ridiculous. Seriously? Go to our page.
Oh, it's a coherent movement with a budget of about $40 billion that's been promoting abortion and sterilization, things around the world. But it sort of ties into today's topic, because if you looked at the that Montreal article on the Montreal nursing homes, I tied it very closely to the Montreal area euthanasia movement. And they dominate the political scene there. And they've dramatically liberalized euthanasia in Montreal. And it's the same people who dominate the medical establishment there. And Montreal is very much like what you have in the New York, Boston area in the United States. You have an area with these enormous COVID-19 death tallies, like far out of whack with the rest of the country. And if you look closer, the deaths are almost entirely in nursing homes. So it's interesting that one of the main websites would only print that story if I deleted any reference to the Montreal euthanasia movement.
Oh, interesting.
He didn't want to go down that road. He just wanted, what's that?
Interesting. That they made you take that out before you could print the article?
Yeah, because he didn't want to make that connection. I don't know, it's sort of, anyway, that's their trip. I get all kinds of things sort of weird. You want to have sort of half rewrite the article for you. But that hasn't happened there. I didn't do it with the stuff I've done so far on New York. I just there's just only so much you can put in, like 1,100 or 1,200 word article. That's one that's definitely coming. Like New Jersey passed a really liberal euthanasia bill like 3 months before COVID. Not that they had any foresight. It just leads to an understanding of the medical establishment in that area. You find a lot of people there are very frustrated euthanasia people. They haven't been able to get the sort of laws passed that they wanted to, and they've been pressing for decades. So that's I don't want to put that in the foreground, because it's really it's more sort of a latent motive within this community. They had other sort of upfront ulterior motives. What I wanted to talk about was the whole business of patient seeding. Are you familiar with that concept?
Oh yeah, yeah. I read the articles you sent us, and I was shocked at what we don't know about what's going on with these nursing homes. It's shocking.
You know, to me, the key article, there's an Associated Press article. I'm going to pop it up right here now, which I hyperlink on one of my articles, and it dates, the one I've got now is May 21st. And they estimate that 4,500 COVID-19 patients were sent from hospitals in New York State to nursing homes in New York State. And that would have happened over about a 5-week period. And I'm estimating just in New York State, about 300 nursing homes had major outbreaks.
Wow.
And it happened in New Jersey. It happened in, like I mentioned, that one, sort of the Boston Newark megapolis. It's basically a consolidated city there. Newark, New York, Stamford, Hartford, Providence, Boston. It's a consolidated city there. And this policy appears to have been conducted right across that city, that whole megapolis. And I'm not exaggerating, because some of the Connecticut and Massachusetts and New Jersey are giving pretty good statistics. New York is just lying like crazy to minimize their nursing home body count. But right now in Massachusetts, there's 6,700 dead from COVID, 4,300 nursing home residents.
Wow.
And they are trying to put their thumb on the scale to minimize that number. And every one of those states, you know, 50 to 100 nursing home workers dead. There's some nursing homes where 5 workers died in 1 month. And it was all back to this business of when the pandemic first started to hit, these big hospitals, and these are some enormous companies, these health systems on the East Coast, they just started to shunt their patients to nursing homes. And a lot of these nursing homes had no ability to handle it. There's a video online you could find. There was one nursing home that was given 58 COVID patients, like here.
And they weren't senior citizens?
Oh, yeah, they were all senior citizens. Okay. They had to be some sort of reason to send them there, right?
Okay, yeah, that's what I wondered.
What wasn't going to happen is they weren't going to have them in the hospitals. The hospitals had to clear their deck. to make room for COVID-19 patients, which makes no sense. But it said to make room for the potential wave of intensive care COVID patients. There's an excellent quote online from one of the leading doctors involved in California's long-term care industry. He's a spokesman for a society in California, and he makes it really big. And these people who protested immediately when New York and New Jersey started just flat out sending them to the these nursing homes. And he says, you know, for every one you send, within a couple of weeks, you're going to get 20 back. And that's exactly what happened in New York. Like, the hospitalizations there are way out of line.
Yeah, because their numbers just mushroomed uncontrollably. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be right back with our guest, William Kay. He is on with us for the full show, so even though we had a little fumble at the outset, we're all good now.
Oh, we're locked down.
We're all good now. You're going to get a ton of great information. So you can follow us at wethepeopleradio.us, and all the links to William's information are on there. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee.
Somehow we got this song. I guess it was just because William's from Canada, so I guess we'd just throw down and get the America thing in there.
Yeah, I guess so. We're out of control.
Last time William was on here, we learned that the Canadians don't all really hang on the national anthem like we do. Remember that? I've laughed about that so many times. He said, yeah, they don't really know the words. They change them all the time. I just want you to know for the past 2 years, we've still been laughing about that.
True.
Oh, that's funny.
So with the nursing home, one of the things that I thought was astounding was the fact that they're sending all these people to the nursing homes. Nursing homes had no ability to isolate patients with their air systems and whatnot. So it was pretty much a guarantee once you started sending people there that everybody in the place was going to get it.
Well, yeah.
And
add to that, I've probably come across, like, there's a lot of good local journalism, like the Long Island Chronicle, and, you know, there's a lot of those local papers are really talking to the people from the homes themselves. I've come across, I'd say, a dozen articles where they mention not only not isolate the person, that person was going into a dormitory.
Oh.
Where there was, like, you know, I don't know, half a dozen other beds.
Right.
One toilet. I mean, it's just the opposite of a quarantine. You're taking infected people and you're putting them there. On March the 28th, you know, Cuomo and Zucker and the other one, they sent out that directive to every nursing home in New York State saying that you will take whatever patient you are sent by a hospital, and you are not allowed to ask if they've got COVID-19, and you are not allowed to test them for COVID-19. You are going to take them. That's bottom line. And they would have only have sent that had there not, because they start the letter by saying, just to clarify things. Because you could tell they were already trying to send these patients to the nursing homes, and a lot of the nursing homes are refusing them, saying, we don't have the gear to handle this.
Sure.
And then that letter went out. The identical letter goes out in New Jersey 2 weeks later. The identical letter went out on March the 8th, or almost 3 weeks earlier, in Lombardy, Italy.
The same exact wording?
I haven't read the Italian one, but it was to the exact same effect. It was forcing all local nursing home owners to receive these people. And they were really lowballing the risk at the time. And they paid them 160 euros per patient they took in. The granddaddy of these biobombings of nursing homes was one in downtown Milan. It's a 1,000-unit nursing home. Sometime after March the 8th, they received what they were told were 19 recovering COVID patients. Within 2 or 3 days of them receiving those 19 patients, seven of them died. I mean, they were recovering.
Oh, wow. Great recovery.
They were in the meat throes of it.
Sure.
And a couple of the accounts, they use phrases like in the blink of an eye or, you know, in a few days, the place was completely overrun. Staff had asked to use protective gear. They were denied. They were forcibly told they couldn't even bring their own from home because you're scaring the patients. So there was a week or two there, nobody was wearing protective gear, and it just ran rampant over the building. I'm not exaggerating. The last body count was 405 in one nursing home.
Holy
and that
God.
Is the granddaddy of them all. Although I would say in the Boston, New York, Newark area, we've probably got 40 to, you know, 60 that have over 100 deaths in one facility.
So like 40%
account after account.
40% of the beds were dead people at that point.
Yeah.
Wow.
There was one in New Jersey. It was the whole wings of it had been abandoned. So many workers had got sick. Everyone stopped showing up. Police went in there. They found 17 dead bodies stacked in one room. This is in New Jersey. There's a lot of these facilities. They're reporting it, and they're underreporting. But that particular facility is in Andover, New Jersey. They're still right now claiming that only 71 have died. There was a lawsuit filed in late April said that already by that time, 84 had died. So if you go to this, you know, all over the place, I'm saying there's hundreds of these facilities that have had these massive outbreaks, and there's nowhere else in the United States are they that concentrated. There was a really bad one in Washington State early on.
Yeah, that was one of the first ones.
And was that the same thing?
Yeah, it was not seeding. I don't know how it happened there. It just happened by accident. It does happen by accident, but when it should have been a total object lesson, because by the time they passed, they issued that decree to all the hospitals, to all the nursing home administrators that you were going to take these people, the lessons of that Kirk County, Washington one were well known. I mean, they had already had 30 or 40 dead. Half of the residents were in ICU in hospitals. It was a disaster. It was an accidental entry of the virus into a nursing home. But it should have told everyone in America. The CDC wrote a report 2 days on the 27th of March saying you're just how dangerous it was. And it was looking at the Kirk County example of how we just got to completely quarantine off all nursing homes. And that was before Cuomo and Tucker and these guys sent out that letter telling these guys you're going to have to take them and then sending 4,000 infected patients into nursing homes.
So the CDC had prior to the Cuomo order, the CDC knew and had publicly stated that that was a danger.
Oh, yeah. They go into details. They've done a couple of estimates on how easily people could shed the virus, how easily asymptomatic people could shed the virus in the nursing home environment. Also, okay, they write that letter, I think March 28th. It was not until April the 19th that they made it, they prohibited COVID-19 positive workers from working until that time. So from March 28th to April the 19th, they're just pouring infected inpatients into these nursing homes. And they've got workers in those homes who are testing positive, and it is not a requirement for you to stop working. And they're working without PPE, and they're working in multiple homes.
Oh.
That
yeah,
went on for
good.
A solid month.
Yeah.
Now, this is you can only describe it as a deliberate attempt to spread this virus. It beggars my imagination that anybody would commit these many homicides intentionally. My theory was that at the very early times of this pandemic, the fear amongst the sort of the hospital bureaucrats and the sort of medical complex of the U.S. Northeast and others was that it was going to be a dud. There wasn't going to be much of a pandemic. And they thought that by sort of getting the ball bouncing, by sending these patients into nursing homes, they'd get things going. And you can tell by about April 16th, Howard Zucker, the minister of the health commissioner of New York State, he's now starting to put the brakes on it. He calls this an emergency telephone conference with every one of the 600 nursing home operators in New York State, and he forces them to draw up lists of all the people they think that they've died from COVID and all the ones that they know have lab tested, et cetera, and they start really manipulating the statistics. But you can tell it's kind of a Frankenstein's monster story. I mean, they definitely wanted to introduce these infections into these nursing homes, but I think they underestimated. This is a totally new virus. They really underestimated just how much damage this virus could do in a nursing home. There's account after account of, you know, within a few days, the place is in complete panic. I mean, it's spreading so rapidly. There's so many sick workers. There's so many people refusing to work. The workload has increased so much. And when this happened in Montreal, there were nursing homes for the really sort of seriously bedridden people. There was one staffer per 30 workers. So many staffers were sick or refusing to work. And so there were people dying of dehydration. There's just horror stories coming out of Montreal.
Oh, my God.
You know, once again, it's the police and the army eventually has to go in there. Across much of Montreal, there's about 15 nursing homes that are being run by the Canadian Army right now.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're getting sick.
Wow.
And they issued this scathing report. But again, it was more than anything, it was sort of the epidemic amongst the nursing home working staff causes this absolute chaos.
Right.
Like in home after home, I'm reading these accounts of various homes in New Jersey. Within a day or two, nobody's answering the phone. Nobody's at the front desk. Like whatever limited staff they have, they're all in IC units or makeshift IC units in the backs of these nursing homes where dead bodies are going out a couple times a day.
Hmm. And nobody is reporting at this point.
No, they are reporting it right now. The initial statistics were very vague about exactly who was dying. And they were doing that deliberately to exaggerate the impact of the virus. Like, there was those two California doctors who gave that video that got pulled off YouTube.
Yeah,
but
right.
They hit the nail on the head. You know, the broader healthy population was not at risk at all. But a lot of the early death data coming out of the pandemic promoters really obscured exactly who was dying. And it was only after a couple of weeks into this that we started realizing, you know, that a quarter of them were over the age of 90. And then as time wears on, you realize, A, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, that tight cluster of five states, they have about 55% of U.S. deaths are all in that one spot. And then further investigation, you realize that overwhelmingly, you know, probably the major 70 to 80% of all those deaths are in nursing homes that these clowns I have total watch and supervision over. Mm. And it's Cuomo, the guy that's going on national television telling us how to do pandemics.
Right.
And he's watching over just a mass extermination.
We've got to take a break, but yeah, let's talk about that when we get back. The Cuomo show that I think was
the Mario Brothers.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the giant Q-tip,
the big cover up.
Hope that destroys both their careers. Anyway, you are listening to We the People. Our guest today is William Kay. You can find all the information about the program and previous shows with this guest, which are really informative. You can catch all that at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Well, there you go, William. Perfect song for the Cuomo brothers.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about Andrew Cuomo. Like, I mean, I don't think I picture him as kind of a bit thick. You know, like not entirely that bright. He's someone who obviously you know, was born and married into high politics of the area. And I don't know if he has a sort of the evil intent that I see in Howard Zucker, like the health commissioner. I mean, well, my question is, what did Cuomo know and when did he know it? Like, how did he understand this whole patient seeding process? He knew it was going on. His name was on top of that one letter. But at that time, there was a lot of hype coming out of the hospital saying that we don't have enough space. We've got to clear away all this space for all these ICU units. That's why we've got to send these thousands of patients, these COVID patients, to these nursing homes. So maybe Cuomo he's just sort of signing on to this. He's totally deferring to Zucker, the health commissioner. That's my theory. I don't really think that he's someone who would actually sign off on something this off the wall.
Once that started, there's no way to put the genie back in the bottle. I mean,
but they kept doing
it. They did it until May the 10th. I'm not sure when they actually stopped doing it. They came out clearly. They rescinded that letter on May the 10th. So there's a 6-week period there. 7-week period there when when nursing homes had no choice. Like any hospital could say, that person's going to that home, boom, done. But I think my theory was that by late April, they had already pretty much stopped doing it. And they were just, for some reason there was this other delay. I can't believe they were still doing it May the 10th. But of course, now they're holier than thou. When they announced the decision that they would no longer send a COVID-19 patients into totally unprepared nursing homes. They then announced these things that they're going to test every nursing home worker twice a week. Anybody with a resident of the nursing home who gets COVID is going to be immediately transferred out. So they've completely reversed themselves. And now there's posturing as the front line, as the vanguard in terms of tough regulations on nursing homes. But there was this, several-week period there, sending in the patients, disrupting the ability to use proper equipment in there. The same hospitals that were sending the patients to the nursing home were also hogging all the personal protective gear. And these hospital systems, they're much larger than these little nursing homes.
Sure.
So they made it very difficult for a several-week period for there to be any proper infection control, any proper testing in those homes. Now they're posturing, as the paragons of geriatric hygiene, but this is not what they were doing before. There's a really important article in the Federalist saying people just cannot let this article go away. There's a few, like One American Network had a couple of articles on it, and Fox has had a couple of good articles on it, but I just can't believe they're going to get away with this.
Do they actually have a number yet of how many folks were infected in nursing homes in New York? I mean,
to the actual number. You can go to the New York Health Authority has that. What they obscure is death in nursing home. When Health Commissioner Howard Zucker had his emergency April 16th teleconference with 614 nursing home operators, he was already in a panic at that time.
Right.
And I can't remember where I was going with it.
Well, so I know they were taking
okay, what
the
he
death.
Did, okay, now I remember where I was going with that. He ordered them that on their list of deaths, you are not allowed to include anybody who died off facility.
Right.
So if they're in the ambulance going back to the hospital, they're not counted. That you can have a 15-year resident at a nursing home, contracts the virus at the nursing home, dies a day after being shipped to the hospital. That is not considered a nursing home death
exactly.
In New York, and it's the only state that's doing that.
So there's no way they're ever going to come up with that.
So you get all the numbers
number.
You want, but you can't get nursing home death out of New York.
Right. So they'll never have an accurate number on how many people were actually
infected. Oh, no. There are so many lawsuits right now. There's already class action lawsuits. There are hundreds of lawsuits for wrongful death that have already been launched. They are going to dig it up. They are going to dig up the time of every hospital transfer to every nursing home. They're going to dig up. What they could start with in New York is On January 1st, there was 101,000 people living in nursing homes. You have a list of actual people with actual names. I'm saying that already 20,000 of those are dead.
So this
isn't going to end. So that's another way. You look at the aggregate death figures. They're not going to get away with it.
No.
They just have to try to stretch it out as long as they can and mystify the issue as much as they can.
And when you look at those numbers, and you compare it to the total number of deaths in New York, it's really not a pandemic on the streets. It's a pandemic in.
Oh no, good point. Yeah, this is entirely within institutions because it's
right.
Also rampant in the hospitals.
Right.
And get this, talk about like just evil intent. There's a Long Island Chronicle article about the systematic putting of COVID patients into detox facilities around the city, and a lot of them have had 10, 15 fatalities. So there's a wider picture because the geriatric wards in a lot of the hospitals rampant in there. So if you think of, I did it with Montreal. I came to the conclusion it was over 90% of all fatalities were inside government-run institutions or government-regulated institutions.
Right.
It was not an issue on the street.
And I gotta believe
even
that
California,
that's the same
California.
Thing in New York.
Yeah,
it's got to be the same. I mean, it's not. It's in the institutions where the problem is, and here they've locked down the entire city, closed people's
yeah.
businesses, and made a big mess out of this when the problem wasn't there.
Yeah, they were looking over it. Just give you some scale here. New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, collective population, 40 million. It's almost identical to the collective population of California, 40 million. COVID deaths in those five connected states, 55,000. Same population, California, COVID deaths, 4,200. Those states probably have, when the truth gets out, already over 30,000 nursing home deaths. California, 1,700 nursing home deaths. I mean, that's the difference in scale. These are the same population sizes.
Right.
One had 1,700 nursing home deaths. One had, 30,000 plus.
Yeah. But the nursing homes.
How are they going to explain that?
Well, like the nursing homes around the country, I only really heard about the people being sent back to nursing homes once they'd been infected on the East Coast. Was that being? Were they saying to do that elsewhere, and just nobody followed the rules, or was that just
happening?
To
my knowledge,
there?
There's only a paper trail in four states. I think it is New York, New Jersey, Michigan. And I think maybe Illinois. But if I'm looking at Massachusetts and Connecticut, and they are so similar to what happened in New York and New Jersey, where we have these letters with the governor's name on top saying, you're going to take these patients. There's a paper trail in New York and New Jersey. I just don't think that paper trail exists in those other states in that region. But you're right. I would say probably 46 of the states of the union, or 45 of the states of the union, never did this, never did patient seating. California's death per million from COVID, 107. New York State's death per million, 1,538. And if you get into places like the Bronx, it's way over 2,000 deaths per million. California, once again, is 107 deaths per million, which is like nothing compared to what happened over there.
Right.
You got to wonder, like, is this the same virus? Are we talking about the same disease here?
Right.
Yeah.
Massachusetts, almost 1,000. Connecticut is over 1,000 deaths per million. The top five in the U.S. are those five states in terms of deaths per million. New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island. And they are just one tight, integrated unit that has been ruled by the Democratic Party as a one-party state for 50 years.
Mm.
And there isn't a person working in the medical industrial complex on the government side of the equation who wasn't appointed by those people.
Mm. Well, that's... Mm-hmm.
That says a lot.
Yeah, that gives you pause.
Any connection between the medical... folks in those states, the people making decisions or advising the governor, any connection between those people?
Okay, put on your space helmets. I'll explain. There are these space age organizations. They are ultra-modern organizations. They hardly exist anywhere else in the world. They are non-profit societies. There are no shareholders. But over a long period of time, the managers of these enterprises manipulate and co-opt the board of directors or the board of trustees into the point where they are basically a rubber stamp of what the managers do. But if the managers fight amongst themselves, then they have to go back to the board to sort it out. But some of these have turned into large enterprises. And what you find in New York, New Jersey, Boston, Connecticut, and Rhode Island are these things called health systems. There's now, it's no longer Mount Sinai Hospital, it's Mount Sinai Health System. And they own a dozen hospitals and clinics and what have you. But some of these are immense enterprises I never even knew existed. There's one called Hackensack Meridian. And it is it's confined, because it's a nonprofit society, it can only operate inside New Jersey. But it owns 17 hospitals. It has 34,000 employees. There's another one. It's a nonprofit society called Partners Health. And it is confined to operating only within Massachusetts. And it owns 7 full hospitals. It has 75,000 employees. Its medical supply equipment budget is over $3 billion a year.
Wow.
So across this area, this sort of Boston, New York ages area, there's a couple of dozen of these. Well, they're nonprofit societies, but they usually have the word health system in their name. And amongst those group, this group of about two dozen nonprofit corporations, they probably own about 100 or so hospitals, and those would be the largest, newest hospitals in the area. A lot of them also own long-term care facilities, but they don't have a big part of that action. But these are big fish in little ponds. They're all integrated into the local university systems. Quite often they have co-joint ventures with a university's medicine department. They reap huge amounts of government grants. Just that Mount Sinai health system, they pull in about $400 million a year just in U.S. federal government research and development grants. So they get money from philanthropists. They get money from running these hospitals like commercial enterprises. And the senior executives of these things are very well paid. Generally, salaries of an executive of one of these health systems would range from about $7 to $12 million a year. And the executives are there's a lot of executives. There's that Hackensack Meridian one. There's probably 30 executives making over $1 million a year.
Gosh, so while they're a nonprofit society, that explains the cost of the bandwidth.
Yeah, it sounds like nonprofit business
is doing well. Okay, we've got to take a little break in the middle of this. Sorry, okay. I hate to bust your momentum here. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
No problem.
You are listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Probably use that when you interview some of these people. You just send that like as a little, you know, sound file with your inquiries. This is a music-rich environment, unfortunately, on a very dire topic. But okay, so go back to the web of nonprofit hell.
What were 30 or 40 years ago, individual hospitals and smaller nonprofits have morphed into these hospital chains, but they also own all kinds of clinics and ambulance centers and what have you. Like I gotta say, these are big fish. Can you imagine, you know, employing 70,000 people in Boston? Like how big a fish you are in Boston. But there's another aspect to it is these hospitals are major purchases of medical supplies, and they're also major purchases of pharmaceuticals. And there's a lot of research and development going on with, you know, ever, you know, cutting-edge scalpels, no pun intended, and other pharmaceuticals and things like that. These guys are got a front-row seat on that. So you've got some of these hospital executives who are making $10 million a year. They're also overseeing a medical equipment purchasing budget of multiple billions of dollars a year. So there's all kinds of opportunity for these people to sort of meld into this whole community that manufactures pharmaceuticals and manufactures medical equipment. When it gets to the issue of the patient seating process, you can see how easy it would be for these big outfits, like, you know, New York City Health and Hospitals and Montefiore. There's a lot of these groups. They have like 11 hospitals. They have, you know, 40 facilities around New York City. It'd be very easy for them to just grab up whatever protective equipment there was available. And these nursing homes, a lot of which are independent, a lot of which are just strapped for cash, et cetera, they are no way during the initial month or 5 weeks of the crisis could they prevent the very hospitals that are sending them the patients from depriving them of any sort of protective equipment.
Right. Yeah, they've got a lock on all that.
How convenient.
And these are the guilty parties. I think they're this has to be mentioned. I'm trying to figure out how much does it cost to have a COVID-19 patient spend, you know, a day in the hospital or do a hospital stay. Like for every, it's a fraction of the overall people who test positive end up going to hospital. But what is the cost of that hospitalization? You know, three or four different estimates from, you know, different groups. It varies from around 20,000 to about 90,000. Per at the COVID stay, and the stays last from like 6 to 20 days. A lot of people stay in, from the moment they check in to the moment they leave, it's a 20-day stay. That is not uncommon. And hospitals are typically billing, anywhere from 20,000 to I saw 88,000 was one of them. That's if you get a ventilator, et cetera. And the numbers on hospitalization are the same sort of nonsense that you see with the numbers of deaths and everything else. Florida has a larger population than New York State. I think Florida's around 22 million. New York State's a little under 20 million, like 19.5 million. So Florida, larger population than New York State. Florida, throughout the whole crisis, has had fewer than 10,000 hospitalizations. It's about 9,800. New York State, it is now at 89,000. And they're going to hit 100,000 definitely, you know, within the week. And look how much those hospitals are charging for a one hospitalization. And they are dinging these hospital insurance companies, a lot of which are backed up by the government. And Trump and Cuomo and all these guys keep coming out saying, you know, sort of, we got your back. So they're just running these incredible bills. I mean, in New York State, it's approaching 90,000 hospitalizations. The cost per hospitalization varies from 20,000 to 88,000 or 90,000 around there again. So average that out to around 40,000, multiply that by about 90,000. That's how much those very same those hospitals like Mount Sinai Health Systems and Partner Health Systems and Montefiore Health Systems, they're the ones who now have all these patients. So it worked just like that guy from the California Long Care Society said would happen. He used the figure 20. That's the actual figure that comes back. And no, he was in the ballpark figure. Like for every, you know, COVID infection patient you stick into a nursing home, you're going to get 20 patients back at the hospital in the ICU unit. And that's what happened in New York. It's almost, of course, the number is going to keep rising over time. So at this point, it is almost exactly 20. Because they dispersed 4,500 patients, and now they've got their cumulative hospitalization is approaching 90,000. And there's like no other state of the union's got anything near that kind of hospitalization.
No,
I couldn't get California's cumulative number, but it would probably, you know, under 20,000.
And yet we hear hospitals are running at third staffing and doctors are getting laid off because there are no patients. How's that?
They kicked everybody else. Oh, that's because you're living in California. Like, in the initial panic, they're booting everybody out of the hospitals. People had other things to do. People who had customers, they all got booted out of the hospitals because they wanted these massive intensive care units, which never filled up in most parts of the union. They haven't even filled up in places like New Jersey, which is an underlying point. There never was a need to disperse all of those patients to the nursing homes. Like, there never was this grand shortage of hospital space anywhere.
No, there wasn't. I mean, even these, I was reading the other day about all these field hospitals and all these emergency facilities they built.
Underutilized.
Or not utilized at all, and they've taken them all down.
Yeah, whole floors of hospitals sitting there. I know. There was never an initial urgency, but this is exactly what they wanted in New York. You know, they were hoping, you know, we'll get tens of thousands, which they got. So they did. The hospitals themselves, these were put off in like 700-bed hospitals, and they morphed into like, you know, 2,000-bed hospitals. So some of these hospitals are making huge amounts of money.
God, you'd hate to think that was the motive, but it wouldn't be the first time that's ever happened.
They would have been totally on top of this. One thing that I find with absolute disturbing regularity as I go through, whenever I go, like, I go to this various website, and then I'll look up the About Us section, then I'll look up the People section, and then I'll start going through the bios of all these people throughout this whole pandemic. And what you find again and again with absolute disturbing regularity is this is not their first rodeo. You find people, you know, this is, you know, he was involved in the SARS epidemic and then the MERS epidemic and then the bird flu and all those. You know, he'd been involved in all these various government programs, you know, up and down the line. That bio reoccurs hundreds of times. So when there was first a rumor that we were going to have a pandemic, these guys' ears all perk up. Yeah, I mean, this is now, you know, pandemic number 7 for Howard Zucker. They've been through this before. They know the importance of public relations. You know, they know the importance of death statistics and things like that. And they know that there's going to be oodles upon oodles of money to be made, middlemanning various medical supplies and things like that. You got, you know, Jared Kirsch and all these other clowns getting involved in that.
And you'd like to think that they've been involved in a bunch of other, you know, giant issues, so they should be really good at it by now, but unfortunately that line seems to be going the wrong way.
No, this is, they're clearly not.
Yeah, obviously.
Particularly the people that we get lectured to the most, like all those guys, they oversaw one of the greatest either medical fiascos or sort of one of the worst mass murders in modern history, which is what it really is. It's sort of they could plead sort of manslaughter on the last maybe 20,000 murders. Like, Your Honor, we only wanted to kill 1,000 of them or so, and then it just blew all out of proportion, and we couldn't put a stop to it. So maybe they could plead for a lesser sentence on the last 19 or 20,000 homicides, but first 1,000, no, you got to take those on the head.
Wow.
Man, you just about can't make that kind of stuff up, and with a lot of good research. So the articles, we're going to head out to our news break here in a couple of seconds, but you can look this all up. It's at wethepeopleradio.us, and William has done some amazing research. We'll be right back.
Ow! Who said I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want. Listen to me, Little Red Riding Hood. I don't think.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. All our microphones are on, all our headsets work. The second hour is always a lot less
we're all tuned up,
dramatic.
Ready to go.
How's that?
Yeah.
So we have our guest on for the second hour is the same guy who was on the first hour. And if you missed it, you should go back and listen to it in the archives. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. So, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape right now is geared up for the hot weather electrical shutdown that we're going to experience here in California.
More things
so
to
if you need a
to.
Generator, go by and see them. They also handle the Honda product line, and they've got lots of Honda generators on the floor and ready to go. You can go by and see them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, or give them a call at 226-9226, or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And we live in a riot-free zone, so feel free to go there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's parking and everything.
There's parking.
It's kind of great.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. So our guest today is William Walter Kay. I added his middle name because it makes him sound more official. He lives in Alberta, Canada, and writes a lot for the Canada Free Press and also for the Global Research website. It's a center for research on globalism. I've put those links on there for you. And he runs a website called ecofascism.com. No trick spelling there, just ecofascism.com. And really good information, very, very well researched. So, you know, William, unlike so many people out there who just, you know, kind of want to shoot their mouth off with all their, you know, beliefs and all that, he actually does the research and attempts to inform people. It's mm-hmm. a whole new idea. It's kind of what our media used to do, but sort of, you know.
Yeah, that was before your time, William.
That was a rumor that, you know, that was what they were there for, but...
That's a myth of the modern media created. They were once good and now
they were
bad,
once amazing and
they were always bad. Yeah.
Now they're now they're in the tank, but you know, before they weren't.
That's how we just notice how bad they are. We're wiser, that's all.
Hey, so before we get off on something else, I just was thinking during the break, I was curious, in your research. Okay, so the statistics and all the things that we've seen for this COVID-19 thing are that it affects the elderly disproportionately, but
correct
in light of the fact that the highest death rate was in a place where they put the elderly in a position to where they would die more often. I mean, do you think it really, based on your research, is it because of the patient seating, or is it really because?
Oh yeah, there are several jurisdictions around the world where it's pretty obvious they did patient seating. What they did in Montreal was more confinement. There's a bit of mention of actual sending patients in, but they just suddenly imposed a rule that no nursing home could send a COVID-19 patient to a hospital. And over time, you'll get the same effect because they're just not equipped to manage that sort of, you know, the proper infection control, and it gets around the whole hospital. It wasn't as bad in Montreal as it was in New York. But there's other places out around the world. It's the key to understanding the pandemic is how geographically different it is. There's the area in northern Italy, starting with Lombardy and a few little provinces around it, just astronomical death count, and they were the first place to get hit. And there's a correlation. The higher the absolute number of deaths, the greater percentage those deaths are in nursing homes. That's another reason why we know that New York is lying about their nursing home death count. I mean, they're coming in at 25% of all deaths. You know, New York, Rhode Island, 55 to 75%. Montreal, over 90%. You get into Lombardy and these places, it's always over 50% of these massive death counts. And they're not even counting all the workers that were infected as well, nor is anyone commenting on all of the people who were infected by people who were first infected in these nursing homes. Because mm-hmm. those workers, they had lives. They were going out, you know, socializing. They had families and what have you. I think ultimately they're going to show that, like, where there was no seating, you get a California, you know, 100 per million. Where there's seating, you get, you know, 1,000 to, you know, 1,800 per million. Like in places like Brooklyn, over 2,000. Madrid in Spain, there's a province in Spain called the Community of Madrid, and it's basically the city of Madrid. Same thing. They were the first region to follow Lombardy's lead. Lombardy started this practice, and they were initially exaggerating their death count, but you see the same phenomenon take over. These people started this city. I suspect it might have been done in earlier pandemics, but there were five or six specific jurisdictions where it happened. And where it happened, monster death tolls. It's Belgium, it's Madrid, it's Northern Italy, it's New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and it's Montreal. And then later on, much later, England starts posting these high death tallies and other places. But there's definitely a timeline there. There was a sort of a domino effect. Undoubtedly, the first region to do it is Lombardy. And you had just this wave of deaths. And a lot of the other places, they were tended to be exaggerating their deaths, and they were just sort of repackaging last year's sort of flu season death tallies. And then there are certain regions where, no, they are not faking it. Their aggregate deaths year over year are going through the moon, and it's almost all coming out of nursing homes, geriatric wings, detox facilities, other, you know, assisted adult living facilities. That is like the overwhelming portion, like
but
the
80-90%
of it.
There's also the number of deaths that are attributed to COVID that aren't really COVID. I mean, they just reported a guy in California got attacked by a shark and died of COVID. I mean,
yeah, exactly. That was in the early stages. I noticed that my first article I wrote, which is not on those lists, was about that. When this pandemic first started happening, I thought, no, this isn't that severe at all. They're dealing with people with extensive comorbidities. A lot of the patients were 90 years old and they had lung cancer, and the media and the governments were not properly articulating that to people. And my initial article was accusing them of jacking up their death count. And then as time wore on, I realized in a lot of jurisdictions, they really weren't. Like the large parts of Western Canada, it's not 100 per million. It's like 6 per million. And there's states in the U.S. like that, like Montana, North Dakota. It just simply never happened at all.
Mm-hmm.
But then you look at, as time wore on, you see these massive death tallies start to emerge in places where it is not mere. Like in some places, you could say, look, if you compare it to last year's flu season, this isn't significantly different. There's been flu seasons in the U.S. where 70,000 people die. So there was a period in the early stages of the pandemic, I thought, they're just repackaging another year's flu statistics. Sure, there's going to be a lot of elderly people die. But then I started to notice that there were specific jurisdictions where the body count was just going through the moon. But it's very geographically specific. Now keep in mind that Boston, Newark area, well over half the deaths in the United States. If you take them out of the statistical equation, it's not nearly as bad.
Yeah. And
so that to me, the key understanding is just realizing just how geographically concentrated this is. And then the opposite is there's wide areas of the U.S., like Nebraska and Wyoming through there, almost no impact whatsoever. A few deaths, most of those elderly people. It was basically just a nasty flu bug was all that ever really happened. But in areas where there was pretty obviously a systematic seeding and confining of infectious COVID patients amongst the most vulnerable population, no, then you got something different on your hands.
And then
you've
then,
got this massive body count.
Right. And you brought up confining. I think the whole stay-at-home thing didn't really help this situation at all either, did it?
Well, if you live alone, if it didn't, you're infecting everybody you're living with. Like, that was sort of the other Cuomo brother's, his quarantine, when he wasn't even at home.
Right.
Right.
Parts of it.
Yeah. But he was in the basement.
That was complete nonsense. Trump had the right idea, same idea that President Xi of China has, just massive field hospitals. Anybody who tests positive, no, you don't go home, hang out with your family, hang out with your friends. No, that's not a quarantine.
No,
you go into this facility where all you're going to see is people in hazmat suits for 2 weeks, and then you're going to leave, they're going to give you just the right diet and medication, and you're going to be fine. But Trump sent 4,000 bed spaces in the Javits Center and the U.S. Navy ship Comfort early April. Those 4,000 patients that those hospitals sent to the nursing homes, every one of them could have been intercepted by those field hospitals.
Yeah.
Not a single person would have went back to a nursing home. They would have went into a proper military-grade quarantine, and you would be monitored until you were well, and then you would leave. You know, and if that's the response you should have. If there's going to be a massive wave like this, yeah, you're right. I mean, this idea of go home and quarantine, well, that's nonsense. Like, that isn't a quarantine at all.
Right.
Well, in a lot of places they did, but let's face it, in lots of places they didn't. When we come back, I want to know from you when it started to become public that the nursing home thing was caused by people being sent back and what was done kind of on the heels of that. I'm kind of curious what your research showed for that, because I haven't really looked at that. So we are here discussing all this horribleness with our guest, William Alter Kay. He is from Alberta, Canada. We love our Canadian friends, although we haven't had him on for like 2 years, so our bad.
Yeah.
We'll have to stop doing that. And so you're listening to We the People. You can find all these previous shows that are actually awesome and archives that go back about 10 years at wethepeopleradio.us. Apparently nothing, but anyway,
no,
it's kind of a rhetorical question.
It's too late for you anyway.
So William, did they at some point admit that they try to throw up the old, uh-oh, we made a mistake, and reverse course, or did they just sort of let it roll?
Well, they reversed the order. The March 25th order was reversed on May the 10th, which is sort of an admission, but they never actually came out and said, oh, that was a big mistake. They just announced in New York, they just announced this whole new program of stringent tests and regulations. There was no me bad in that. Because they're using bogus statistics on deaths in nursing homes, Cuomo's telling people that New York State is 32nd on the list in terms of percentage of COVID deaths being in nursing homes.
What?
Well, they're just not counting them. There's a huge number. Anybody, if they can get them on an ambulance out the door before they CAC, that's not counted as a nursing home. And that's been what they've been doing since April the 16th.
Wow.
So you got to presume that their percentage of COVID deaths that are nursing home deaths is going to be the same as it is in the neighboring states and in other places where there's been these huge absolute number of deaths. And that puts them in the 70% category. And that's the circus that no one wants to say, that the death count's probably already over 20,000 in New York State. They're claiming 6,000 have died in nursing homes in New York State. Fox, I ran an article 5 days ago. It was probably the best article so far. And they were saying 10,000 or more. But that is still an underestimation. The law, I can tell if it's a controlled opposition article or an article that's been planted to protect or to cover up the dirty deed. If they will totally lowball the numbers. They said, you know, they're acting like they're uncovering this crime, and then they'll mention that there could be as many as 5,000 nursing home deaths in New York State. No, it's probably already over 20,000. New Jersey's over 6,000. Massachusetts approaching 5,000. Those are the official numbers, and they also are suppressing it. So this is a scandal of just humongous proportions.
You mentioned changing courses, and you know, not to get off the subject, but have you done any research on Dr. Fauci?
Oh, that's right.
He was the authority on this thing from the very beginning, and it just seems like he's changed his mind so many times. Can we really trust his research?
Well, he's sort of a classic bureaucrat. That little agency, it's not a little agency, it's a multi-billion-dollar agency that deals with infectious diseases that he runs. He started working there, 60 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And he just slowly wormed his way to the top. But I view that whole network, like there's, I forget the name of the agency, it's not CDC, it's the U.S. Infectious Disease Research Facility or something.
Yeah.
But it's a multi-billion dollar grant-making institution, and it's got its own laboratories and things like that. But it's part of a sort of a global network, like with who a lot of countries have these sorts of things, and they're all integrated. And when I was mentioning earlier, I keep coming across these people that this ain't their first rodeo, like this is the umpteenth time they've had their nose into a pandemic.
Right.
He's a classic one of those.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he was instrumental in the whole AIDS thing. I mean, he was buried in that, and I don't think a lot of people realize.
And they know how to farm it. These guys, you know, they view these big, and I was thinking, well, maybe COVID will never go away. Okay, well, maybe we need some giant international institution with billions of dollars of endowment to just sort of manage this disease that never goes away.
Exactly.
And we could have another 10,000 guys in white lab jackets running around with stethoscopes on their shoulders, consuming resources in some bonfire out back.
That's a great picture.
But you, I thought what you were going to say is, like, when did people start to realize what was going on?
Oh, okay. Good question.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, I was going to ask it. Oh, sorry.
March 25th, Howard Zucker, Cuomo, issue that letter. Obviously, they'd been doing this for about a week already. Zucker had been sending these patients over. Then they issue this letter saying, you guys are going to take these patients whether you like them or not. You're not going to test them whether you want to or not. They're coming. They're staying at your place. They start pouring large numbers of these patients in there. Within 24 hours of them issuing that letter, there were long-term healthcare associations and nursing home associations were issuing news releases. They were protesting it. They were denouncing it. There was organizations of nursing homes that were trying to organize petitions and protests so they could block these patients from coming. It was instantly understood in the nursing home community that this was a fiasco in
the
making.
Bad idea.
And some of those early news reports that these long-term care associations put out said, this is going to increase deaths and this is going to massively increase infections. And these letters were coming out within a day or two of that March 25th decree. So there was no mystery in the nursing home. There's a good video online of this one guy runs a nursing home. I think it was in Boston or or New York. They just dumped 58 patients on him. He's running a modern sort of well-to-do nursing home. He rips out walls in the facility. He builds this whole airtight chamber on the ground floor of the building. Like they had the renovation crews come in working around the clock to rip all these things out. They interviewed him. About a month or so into it, he said he'd already lost 50 long-term patients in his facility to COVID. Even doing this, like even going to the trouble of like ripping out whole walls and building these, you know, airtight chambers and what have you. And there was a lot of other facilities. They're in dormitories. They've got narrow corridors. They've got crappy, you know, 80-year-old ventilation. They eat in communal dining halls. They have shared bath facilities and stuff like that. You are absolutely not going to stop it from raging right across the facility.
Right.
And everyone knows that. And that the nursing homes were complaining instantly when it was happening. They were protesting it. So that's another reason why I don't think they're going to be able to keep it down. And there's a host of articles from local newspapers in the whole New York, Long Island area where they're just interviewing people who work at nursing homes, and they're making an estimate of how many dead people came out of that home, and they're comparing it to government stats. The New York Post did one. They did four nursing homes, and the difference was often a factor of 10. The New York State was saying, you know, 7 people came out of that home dead. The people who worked there said, no, over 70. That happened in Montreal as well. The provincial government was saying that this one facility had only had 30 or 40 deaths in it. The ambulance attendants held a little news conference, and they talked about just how many bodies they had been pulling out of this facility. And it was way above what the state was saying. There's probably 20 stories online now from sort of mainstream, more local media outlets in that area dealing exclusively with that issue, with a nursing home where the manager, staff, the operator is saying, no, there's been over 115 fatalities, and the state is saying, no, 20, 30. That story just gets repeated over and over again.
Mm. That's amazing. You know, and I do recall shortly after, I don't remember the date, but Como on one of his morning shows said that when this whole nursing home thing was kind of exposed, he said, oh, well, we were only following federal guidelines. Yeah. That's why we did it.
That is absolute BS.
Yeah.
The CDC had issued very specific instructions against not doing this and warnings about doing this. They cherry picked some sentence fragment from an earlier CDC communique saying that, you know, you could in an emergency transfer patients to all kinds of facilities. You could transfer them to billiard halls if you wanted to. But they did say you could transfer them to nursing homes and that. But there's a presumption that they would be equipped to do it, that they would know that you're going to do it. It would just start showing up. And they would clear out whole wards, and they would do what they could to isolate that unit. But they weren't saying, here's a great idea. You know, let's just take the infected patients and just sprinkle them around all the nursing homes in the jurisdiction. I mean, you got to wonder, at what conversation did that come up?
Yeah,
that sounded like a good idea.
How we're going to manage the pandemic in New York. And someone goes, I got an idea. As the infected patients come into the emergency care ward, we just take them and drop them off at old folks' homes.
Yeah,
That's how we're going to manage the pandemic.
I hope all these people who lost relatives get some just raging class action suit going and expose this whole thing.
Oh, there's multiple suits launched. I honestly believe one of the reasons why they're keeping this no assembly thing going on is because they don't want the victims of that to start holding like conferences and rallying, because they're also very geographically concentrated. Mm-hmm. There's that one photograph of that woman. She's taken a sheet and she's written "Como killed my mom" on it.
Ooh,
she's hanging that over a freeway overpass. There's already hundreds of suits. When they lift the ban on public assembly, you better watch those people come together.
Yeah,
big time.
Yeah, because you have that right on your article. The article, Howard Zucker's Scarlet Letter. It has a picture of that. Of that giant
of
sheet
that
says
"Cuomo
killed
my." So those people are out there, and they number in the thousands.
Yeah, and it's coming out. We're hearing more and more stories.
Well, there are too many people affected, and all those people had families, and they couldn't go visit them. They didn't know what happened.
All of a sudden, they just got a notice.
And the moving
of
the COVID patients wasn't a secret. A lot of when they do interviews with relatives, they say that my aunt or my mother, whoever it was, called me and said, they're saying that they're moving COVID patients into the building. Like, it was no secret to the people, the residents and staff, that they were starting to send them in. But once again, like within days, there's this one article, it's about a woman who lost her mother, and that's what she said. Her mother called and said that, they're starting to bring COVID-19 patients into the building. Within 2 days, she couldn't get anyone to answer the phone there. There was no one at the front desk. The building just disintegrated. And, and dozens and dozens of people, including her mother, died. That story gets repeated over and over again.
And there was
it's just remarkable. Like, it's within a week, the organization just disintegrates.
Yeah, there was the weather lady at Fox, Janice Dean, maybe? Anyway, she had a very similar story about her mom. And you can only imagine, you look at the numbers, got to be a whole lot more people with the same. I have to take another really quick break, believe it or not. Our guest is William Kay. He is from Alberta, Canada, and does a ton of research. So these are always good shows for you to share with your friends and family. It's all the stuff that the media doesn't research anymore, if they ever did. And you can get people and help them get informed. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We have like less than a half hour. Tick, tick, tick. What are we missing in this? What have we not discussed? Not that I think you, on this topic, you ever run out of information because it just keeps going. What do you think we'll see next, though? Like, you have any indication of other things bubbling below the surface?
I actually believe that these race riots or whatever these events that are happening are a way of the media, and once again, with their Democratic Party machine allies, are trying to change the topic. Like, up until those riots,
doing a pretty good job,
it was all COVID-19. And I think that the more this sort of scandal grows, the more anxious they are to change the channel. And remember that this is New York, New Jersey, Boston. This is a lot of the American mass media companies are headquartered there. They are very disproportionately influential in the country. That whole area there, the Democratic parties of those areas, all 10 senators from those states are Democrats. They absolutely dominate the electoral process at the state level, and at the mayoralty level as well. Like almost all of the cities, Boston has had a Democratic mayor for 90 years now. It has all the features of a one-party state. A lot of that area. That the same government has been in power for so long. The New York State Assembly has had a Democratic majority since 1972. They've had the same chair of the New York State Assembly Health Committee, and that approves the entire health budget for New York State. They've had the same chair of that committee for 36 years.
Holy
His
cow.
His name is Gottfried, and he's a euthanasia fanatic.
Yikes.
And he's one of the people that's really been pushing to have I'm far more liberal euthanasia regime in New York State. They were just on the cusp of doing it. New Jersey just passed their euthanization bill, and the other four states each had one. Not that they were anticipating this, but it's kind of funny because in Canada there was this sort of news series. It was called "What Were You Doing Before the World Became Completely Unnormal?" What were you doing before this whole pandemic happened? And people were sending in photographs saying, "You know, I was, you know, doing this. I was." You know, working here. This is what I was doing before the world just went sideways with this whole pandemic. What was going on in those five states is there was just a full court press going on to liberalize euthanasia. They had, after many years of struggle, had just introduced a bill to the New York Assembly, signed by 30 co-sponsors. This sort of die with dignity bill. The other four states also had bills before the House. Just when things went wonky. Now, I am not suggesting that this was some sort of conspiracy on behalf of euthanasia freaks to do it. But
it could be.
It's very clear the more you get to know that community, the real monomaniacs, the people who have spent their lives trying to get more liberal medically assisted killing legislation, the more you look at that people, the more you look at the others, these people have a very low opinion of certain segments of society. And they very much want to direct the euthanasia at certain target populations. And if you look at the sort of the demographics of who they really want to bump off, they want to really the big push on now in Quebec. Not only have they, you know, dramatically legalized it, like far more than anywhere else in the country. There's a big push on now where they're going to old folks' homes and they're trying to get them to sign pre-consents, just in case the old person loses their marbles. And they will determine if there's any marbles. Like right now, 4% of all deaths in Quebec are induced. 4% of all deaths in the province.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah.
And it's even higher because there's another thing called where they start giving older sick people just morphine and heroin. It doesn't kill them dead, but it rapidly speeds up the process. And that's not even counting them. Oh, you go to places like Holland, it's way beyond that now. I mean, in Quebec now, where it's already 4%, like, induced, like, we show up today at 2 o'clock, and that person's being put down. That's 4% of all deaths in Quebec. They want to dramatically increase that, and the key is to have old people sign these consents. Because the trouble now is they've got people who've got dementia, or so they say, and no longer can legally consent. So by getting large numbers to pre-consent, they're hoping to get that 4% up to, you know, where it is in, like, Holland, where it's well over 10% of all deaths now are induced.
Now,
so there's other places up.
Are they giving consent to family, or are they giving consent to the state to...
They're giving the consent to the state that should I lose my senses...
Holy cow.
Without any further ado, I can be put down.
Yeah.
And they are going to determine if you've got your, the skill testing questions. Like, here's your Rubik's Cube, Bill. You got 5 minutes. hope you make it, man.
Yeah, that is frightening. Yeah, if they can...
Yeah, well, there's a big push on, because they don't want to pay for these people, okay?
Right.
It costs X number of dollars. So I'm sure somewhere deep in the bowels of the New York Reserve Building, there's somebody counting beans for every COVID-19 patient that gets killed. How much money did the state just save? Because that's another elderly person that isn't going to live for the next 7 or 8 years and run up an even larger tab.
Well, and that was during Obamacare, during that whole thing when they were trying to, they're still always trying to change the health system, but there was that big old discussion with Rahm Emanuel's brother, about, if you're 70, you've pretty much lived your life, so you're just basically
had a good life.
Yeah, you're hogging up space for other people, and it's like, wait a second.
We're from the federal government. Could you get in the cars there? Yeah, we're giving you a 70th birthday party down.
Yeah, we'll drive.
We have a black van coming for you later this afternoon.
There was that one movie, Logan's Run, where you get to a certain age, you get bumped off. That's what these people are definitely thinking about. They're doing their bean counters, and there's also a lot of classism and racism, all kinds of other stuff gets into this, but there's certainly segments of the population that, they are more than willing to bump off. And I'm not someone who's even really opposed to euthanasia. I think most people would say there are circumstances where it's okay. But when you see a place like Montreal, where the medical establishment is just wall-to-wall members of various pro-euthanasia organizations, and they start just cranking out thousands of corpses per month, then everyone should get leery.
That's
precisely the demographic cohort, really elderly people, the bedridden. They definitely want to bump those people off.
And that's where it always goes. It always ends up going there. Once you go down that road, pretty soon you end up with the 4%.
Well,
or
not to put too fine a point in it, but let's also remember the other end of the spectrum, right? They've already absolutely captured the let's kill babies end. So the beginning, right?
They've
got them in some states all the way up to the moment of birth. So, they're kind of running out of rope there. And so now they've got to start working on the other end of the spectrum. God, I guess.
There's always been a very strong connection between these extreme sort of euthanasia programs and the fascist movement. They've historically sort of viewed large segments of the population, sort of a life not worth living, and
I read the history of it
in Germany. It went from over the course of, I would say, less than 8 years, the first euthanasia to a point where they were probably euthanizing 50,000 people a year. It was started at a few places, and it was, clearly the bedridden dementia cases. And then they just kept broadening the horizon of it, year after year, and expanding the facilities. And once you've got a facility that's, cremating, 15, 20 people a day, and they already have these in Holland right now. I mean, there's a clinic in downtown Holland that cremates 750 people a year. And you come in one-stop shopping, you do the procedure there, you are put to death. They have put to death, and I'm not making this up, young women who are suffering from depression have consented to medically assisted suicide and have been put to death in Holland.
It's extremely
liberal there. Basically, anybody can walk in and say, I want to be put to death, and they will put you to death. And they're liberalizing it in Canada quite a bit. No longer in Canada is there a reasonable likelihood that you're going to die soon. That has been taken out of the law. So when they're determining whether or not to bump somebody off, he's saying, he's going to die in 6 months anyway. They don't care. They're just, they're really trying to ramp it up. It has a lot to do with pension plans and a lot to do with sort of managing state finances, in an era when people are growing older and older. I think there's some really high level bean counters that, really are quite in favor of it. And euthanasia is an organized political movement. Just type in the word death with dignity, and you'll see there are chapters in every city and town.
Wow.
There's chapters in every state in the USA. And they're highly organized, and it's quite often people who run palliative care centers and people who run hospices and things like that.
Well, you look
it should be legal, but everyone should be leery of these groups.
Well, especially signing up ahead of time.
They're in the business of snuffing people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You sign up ahead of time and, you know,
yeah.
I mean, at that point,
yeah, you kind of
might not want to put yourself on
crazy.
Their radar.
Oh, yeah, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Really quick break, and we'll be back with our guest, William Kay. We can ponder during the break the Chinese and how they handled their COVID patients. They just brought in 40 incinerators, and their death count went way down. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Yeah, we are in the Twilight Zone. Ashley sent me a message here right before the break that there was a Star Trek episode about people that were in a certain culture when they turned 65 and they were expected to just die.
Mm-hmm.
You know that one? I was not a Star Trek.
No, I didn't see that episode, which is kind of surprising because I thought I'd seen them all. But there is a movie called Logan's Run where at the age of 30 you get killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it all depends on who thinks, you know, I mean, when you're 10, you think 30's old. When you're 58, for instance, I'm thinking 70's looking young.
The fancy word is senicide, like S-E-N-I-C-I-D-E.
Yeah.
It is the murder of the old. It happens in a lot of cultures, you know, like putting grandma on the ice floe. You got to be careful with that. There are a lot of lawsuits. Like, a lot of these old people, they take their money with them to the grave, right? So there's an estate. There's a will. And I was reading this one lawyer.
Oh,
there's a lot of,
I'm not evil enough. I forgot about that.
People that they want granny's property. They don't want granny anymore. And so when you get into these mass euthanasia things, you got to watch it because those people start getting involved.
Yikes.
Like, why don't you bump her off so we can get access to this?
Yeah, for all the Star Trek people who are going to be frustrated now that we referenced an episode and didn't give you the details, Ashley tells us it's called Unnatural Selection. So I'm sure you can go find that. There we go. So tie that up there.
That is. Well, no, if you get into the topic of femicide, then there's usually, they'll go to a place like Wikipedia, they'll list a variety of fiction sources where authors have talked about it. And it's sort of something, it has something that's gone on in other societies where you would sort of, you know, in hunting and gathering societies or what have you, sort of bump off the elderly, take them for long walks and things like that.
Sure. Yeah, and see, in the past,
we haven't been doing it
story.
Here that much.
Yeah, it was a great story in the past because it never happened, but now all of a sudden it's becoming part of our society.
I think as a kid, like the first time you see that is like Old Yeller or something.
Well, I'm sure that the gnomes on top of this are you know, sort of they're wrestling with the issue of, you know, modern medicine can keep people living for so much longer. We're putting ourselves into a crisis.
Oh, that's what they say. They have said that a bunch of times. That, yeah, modern medicine
is what's
screwing it all
up. One of the solutions is to really pop up that death rate amongst the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
One of the takeaway things from this whole pandemic is the demographic population that died is pretty much the same demographic population that the euthanasia advocates would have already bumped off had they had the sort of laws that they wanted, had they had the laws that they have in Holland or Montreal in New York those people would have already been gone. Because they've got professional counselors now that go around and talk to people. They can talk you into signing on the dotted line. In fact, the Death with Dignity group in Quebec, part of their manifesto is that, people have a right to have professional counseling on end-of-life issues.
God, that is
like a
just,
professional persuader.
That's just like
they've long done this with sterilization. Quite often, after a woman has had a birth, they've learned that the precise psychological technique, you can get the woman to consent to a sterilization right after a birth, particularly if it's a difficult birth, you get them to consent right on the table. So she'll be sterilized forever. Using that technique, they sterilized a third of all the women in Puerto Rico in the 1970s.
Well, you know, William, the other thing that kind of ties up with this is a guy that we've interviewed a bunch of times, and it's on Technocracy. And I'm just drawing a blank on his name, but he wrote a book called Technocracy, Technocracy Rising, I think. And in that technocracy movement, that was also one of their things that, Robert's giving me smoke signals.
Patrick Wood.
Yeah. Patrick Wood's his name. That ties up with what you're saying, because the technocrat, that's a society run by technocrats, which is what we've had for the last few months. No elected officials, just, you know, experts in their field. And their big thing was, end of life and also abortion. And they were sterilizing pretty much anybody that, you know, couldn't spell very well. Oh, you must be retarded. Bye-bye. You can't reproduce.
Spell sterilization.
Well, they...
use an S, buddy.
Well, yeah. And, you know,
line B.
Well, the
exactly. You line up over there. You'll be fine.
Well, the crazy part of that is, you know, most of the time people have, you know, researched this or whatever, but Patrick Wood is actually the adopted child of a woman who was sterilized during that time period when the technocrats, when that technocrat movement was going on, because her parents were sort of part of it. And they sterilized
the daughter. I think the figure right now in the United States is 700,000 women a year are sterilized every year in the United States.
Isn't that nuts?
It's still very, and there's, I know a lot of women who've been talked into it by their doctors. There's, once again, they've honed these persuasive conversation techniques. If you're going in for any kind of feminine surgery, you are going to get this calculated sales pitch to become sterilized. If you go in for any kind of abortion in the United States, you're going to get this very calculated sales pitch to become sterilized. They know what they're doing. They've honed this over 50, 60 years, these sales pitches.
Well, I'll tell you what, you ever check into a facility, a senior facility, and the counselor comes at you with,
the paperwork, you know, for them to make decisions.
Yeah, don't check in.
Yeah, hard pass.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, too, with this, I think this has caused a lot of people to rethink the senior living idea. You know, well, mom doesn't want to come and live with us because she doesn't want to be a burden, so she's happy in this facility. And whether that's true or not, I'm not going to make a judgment. But I do think families are going to take a much, much harder look at what happens with the seniors in their family. It's like, I think we're going to need to keep them a little closer to home.
It's a hard call. I mean, a lot of people, it's a lot of work to take care of some of these people. And I don't know, it's a really tough, hard call. There was a lot of hypocrisy amongst the Democrats out on the East Coast, though, when they, a lot of them sent their parents, took their parents out of the old folks' home.
Yeah, I did hear
that. And sent them to private facilities and that. There were several four leading politicians that have done that, which, typical from that crew.
Well, I think it was one of the health directors for one of the states back there pulled her mom out right before they started shipping.
It's almost like the, pull their money out of the stock market and then, to me, it's very similar.
Yeah, that's just evil. I can remember the article now, yeah.
Well,
but that's what you expect. I mean, the Democratic Party are, in some regions of the country, are approaching almost one-party statehood, and that's one of the underlying stories. Everywhere where you saw these really grotesque, massive COVID fatalities, which almost in every instance has been nursing home fatalities, you will find a region where there's a single party that is absolutely entrenched. You've got to be pretty confident of your position. You've got to know that your ass is going to be covered before you would even contemplate something as crazy as patient seating at old folks' homes. So only people who were deeply entrenched in a political party where they knew that they're going to win the next election anyways would even think about this stuff. And the Democrats, they win elections by landslides across there.
God, and when
60-80% of the vote.
Well, we've been speaking with a lot of Chinese dissidents over the last year and a half, not realizing how interesting that would actually make this whole pandemic with all the information we've gathered. But I really do hope people go to our website at wethepeopleradio.us and click on the China tab and look down through those topics, because there are a bunch of them for the last, like, 18 months or so. And some of them were exactly what you're just talking about. All those same things totally laid out, and they have verified all of that 100 ways from Sunday, and the Chinese wrote the book on a lot of this stuff. So
yeah, it's a highly authoritarian society. Yep. I don't for better or worse,
got
you know,
training.
I mean, it's gonna. I'm not really much of a China basher. My focus has been on the fiascos here.
Yeah,
there's certainly, had they reported things, the Chinese, had they reported things in a prompter fashion, I think it would have reduced it. But then I'm just looking at at what's happening here on this. If you look from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, it's day and night.
Yeah, one of our Chinese guests, though, like one of our Chinese guests, he literally looked at all the demographics, and he looked at the political parties and the epidemic, and he did the math. He's a microbiologist, so I think they just are addicted to math. But he did the math on what you just were saying, who was managing those areas under these kinds of things, and how they kind of helped themselves get away with
it. That determines what your body count is.
Yep, it really did.
It's the response. It's what the rulers did in that area. Made a huge
Spooky.
Difference. Like, you know, 15 times as much fatalities. That's the difference between New York and California.
Yeah. Well, William, thank you.
That is not some sort of, like, foible. I mean, it's not like they're 15% higher. No,
yeah,
1,500% higher.
That is downright creepy.
Has to be explained.
We have to jump off, but we're going to talk to you guys, or to you again, because our folks love you, and we think you're super smart. So thanks a million. Have fun in Alberta, and we'll talk to you soon.
Will do.
Our guest, William Kay, you were listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the end of the world.